being a good leader doesn't necessarily mean barking out orders. It means listening to the people that are actually doing the work, being out there in the field, and being available.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm joined by Michael Wallace, Senior Vice President of Lero Hill. Mike, thanks for taking the time to be here with me today. Before we get the core conversation going, I always like to start with some good news and gratitude. Is there any personal, professional good news or gratitude you want to share with me or the audience?
You know, Eric, I think the gratitude I have is, and we'll talk about my career and everything, but I really owe a lot of that to my wife. She supported me through all the times when I've had to work a lot of hours and do what I've had to do. And she's there to kick me in the butt when I get depressed or think down on myself. And should I do this or should I do that? She's a good motivator. She helps keep me keep it positive. So it's the gratitude I have is really towards my wife. We've been married for 32 years now. You know, anybody that can put up with me for that long, she deserves gratitude.
I love that. That's awesome. And, you know, I always share a gratitude too. And now I will also share gratitude for my wife. She really does support me in everything we do. And it's been amazing being on a life journey together, and we have a daughter now, and she's amazing. Yeah, I love your sentiment there, and I stole it, so I'm sorry. but on show days, I always have to have gratitude to the guest as well. So for you, thank you. I know your schedule is super busy, and I appreciate you taking some time out to talk to me.
Hey, I appreciate the invitation. This is great.
Of course. Yeah, no, I'm really excited about this conversation. I don't think we've had like a former or current public servant on the show yet. I know you just have this unique perspective I'm really excited to get to. So let's get to it. Tell us a bit about yourself, you know, your background, education, where'd you grow up, kind of your role at the port, maybe your role at Lero now. Tell us about all of that.
Sure. Wow. That's a lot to fill in. Grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I went to engineering school at the Cooper Union. I have both a bachelor's and a master's of engineering in civil engineering for Cooper Union. I joined the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey as a summer intern in 1989. In their materials engineering division, where I was making and breaking cylinders. And I think that's really where I got my start in engineering, moving more towards construction. I just liked all of the construction projects. So I had the opportunity to intern for them for 2 summers. I actually worked with them while I was doing my master's degree. I worked part-time for the materials division. And then in 1991, I joined them as a junior engineer at the time. Worked in various locations. The Port Authority has a vast amount of facilities. Loved working in them. I worked at airports, worked at PATH, worked at TB&T, worked at the ports. And I moved all the way up to from junior engineer all the way up to the chief of construction. I retired recently as of January 5th of 2024. And from there, took a week off. Then I joined Lero Hill. You know, I really liked what they had to offer as far as the type of work, and they do a lot of different work. They're construction managers, and I'm a construction manager, so it just seemed like a perfect fit.
That's awesome. Yeah, we have worked on a number of projects with Lero and Hill and Lero Hill now, and I'm sure you're a great addition to their team, and they've always been great to work with. So I noticed you talked about how Lero has a wide variety of projects, but so does the port, right? You mentioned a couple there. I think some people would be surprised to even learn that the port owns all of those assets. But what was it that inspired you to join the port when you first started as an intern? What drew you to it?
I think really what drew me to it was, you know, it's one thing to see something in a textbook, to learn it in class. It's another to actually put your boots on, go out in the field, get muddy, get dirty, and actually work hand in hand with the people that design it. And more importantly, the contractors that build it. And I don't think people give enough credit to the contractors. that actually go out and build it. And I think that's something I learned very early on, that there are a lot of smart contractors out there that know how to build. And it's not just the engineers that know how to design, it's the contractors that know how to build. And that's really what attracted me to it. And then just, as I said, the variety of work. There wasn't a boring day when I worked for the Port Authority. There was a lot of different projects, a lot of different facilities to work at. I jumped around all over the place. Where, you know, wherever they needed me, I went.
So a big part of the show, we like to focus on how we're positively impacting our communities. You really spoke very highly of contractors and engineers and everything the construction managers do to get these projects completed. But really at the end, they impact the people in the surrounding areas, or the people that come to work in those buildings or that use those transportation systems. Are there any projects you want to highlight or talk about that you think really impacted the communities they worked in or served?
Well, I think every project I worked on at the Port Authority impacted the traveling public. I had a hard time trying to pick out one project, but I think one of the funnest projects I was on, I would say, and the one that really impacted people, I did the Hoboken South waterfront development. So originally, the Hoboken South waterfront, there was a couple of piers, some old pre-World War I buildings. And what the Port Authority did is we actually knocked all those buildings down and we developed a park on Pier A in Hoboken. And I tell you, it gives me a lot of pride every time I see it. I saw it on an aerial photo the other day, and then I actually was watching a TV show and I saw them filming out on that pier. And the pier is used by the Hoboken residents. It's a big attraction. There's a lot of areas to lay down in the lawn there. There's a little atrium out there where they have concerts. And what we also did was we developed the three parcels of land that were around there, and that brought in a lot of business to the area. Two of them were commercial buildings and one was a residential building, which is really unheard of for the Port Authority at the time. Back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when we did that work, we actually put up a 13-story residential building in concert with a developer. So that was something different. But I mean, that was a major impact to the area of Hoboken down there. And if anybody's been out there, Sinatra Drive and the Riverwalk down there, there were other subsequent projects that the city did, but Pier A, where that park is, and the park still exists. Major impact to the community.
So I don't know where Pier A is, but I have family in Hoboken and all of the waterfront development is amazing.
And if you ask them, they'll know exactly where Pier A is. And hop the path, go over there one day, Eric, and walk around over there. It's a great place. In fact, before I retired, I met one of the old project managers who is now the chief of diversity for the Port Authority. And him and I had a sandwich as we walked along over there and reminisced about a project him and I both worked on over there.
That's amazing. And it's one of the really cool things about our industry, right? Like you walk around and projects you worked on and you can talk about them or, you know, and normally it's a collaborative effort. So you have a team you worked on. I love that. We've had some people on the show talk about how they do that with their families, and maybe their families don't love it, but I love it. If I'm in the city and I can point to something we worked on, I'm like, that's really cool.
It's a sense of ownership too. You know, I mean, that's what I think people get out of it too, is people go, that's my bridge. We're sitting here talking about it. That's my park. I built that park. I was there for the whole thing. And as I said, it still brings a smile to my face, the people I worked with on the project, from my own staff, the contractors, everybody that worked on that project together. It was just, there were some tough times too. I'm not going to tell you, you know, every day, but when you get past those tough times, that's when you really understand and, you know, appreciate the project. But yeah, the sense of ownership is what I think anybody that works in the construction management industry gets when they finish a project. They look back and said, yeah, I worked on that.
Talking about tough times, and earlier I'd mentioned gratitude, and I know during the tenure of your career at the port, obviously we just had the memorial for 9/11 a few weeks ago. I just want to have gratitude for everyone that helped in rebuilding the city after that. I know a lot of people get credit, but the port really led the way in a lot of those projects and initiatives, right? Because those were port-owned properties. I don't know, is there anything you want to share about that or your time during the port there as far as challenges go?
It's kind of interesting. In my time in the Port Authority, it seemed every so often or a couple of years, there was unfortunately a disaster. And that actually rallied the staff, united everybody, and in some cases, united the entire regions. We had the 93 bombing. I had only been in the Port Authority for 2 years. I remember the day picking up the phone, trying to call somebody at the Trade Center. I'm saying, why is nobody picking up? Called 4 or 5 people, nobody picked up. Back then, we didn't have social media, so nobody knew what was going on. Then, of course, we had 9/11. I was in Hoboken at the time. I watched the whole thing, unfortunately, unfold from there. Hurricane Sandy. All our facilities were flooded. But like I said, what truly amazed me is the ability of everybody, whether it was the Port Authority or other state agencies, local police forces, everybody, just everybody rallying together to work on putting it back together. You know, I remember driving, you know, after 9/11, I worked down near the old firehouse at Battery Park City where we put in a temporary ferry terminal to get people back into the city. Manhattan, lower Manhattan was closed for a certain amount of time. And it was really interesting, just everybody working together. I mean, you never saw that level of cooperation. And from there, you built relationships that stayed with you for your entire career.
I don't know the exact saying, but I know it's, let's never go back to that day, but let's all behave the way we did the day after. And to your point of working together. And but thank you for sharing that. I know that was a tough time for all of us, right? Like, I'm a New Yorker, you're a New Yorker. That was, it's really horrible. Let's get to a little bit later part of your career now. So you mentioned you retired in January after 33 years as a great public servant working at the Port Authority. What was it like the last time you turned off the lights in the office or the last elevator ride down and you knew you weren't coming back the next day? What were the range of emotions? How did you feel? What went through your head?
Oh, it was surreal to do the same thing for 33 years and then wake up the next day and say, I don't have to go to work. It's a different feeling. You know, it's something you have to get used to. I always knew I wanted to go back to work. I was too young to fully retire. I had done my career at the Port Authority. It was time to move on. But really, I don't miss the day-to-day nonsense I had to deal with. But what I do miss is the people. The people made going to work every day fun and entertaining. And that was something, when I announced my retirement, I did it with a video. I made a video. I had my son make the video for me. He's a graphic design major, so I had him put the video together. Figure, sitting on the couch at home, why not make a video for me? He made this video where I basically, you know, just thanked all the staff. My staff at the Port Authority was my legacy, and I told him that. It was something that had come to me. I had been at a workshop a couple of months before that, and the person asked us, what legacy do you want to leave behind where you're working? And I said to them, it was easy for me to answer that. I said, because my staff is my legacy. All the people that I helped along the way, all the young kids I hired right out of college that went through the Port Authority Associates Program, summer internships, to just see them move up the ladder, becoming the next leaders, that really, I felt fulfilled. It was surreal. It was sad, but you know, it was a happy time too, because I think in my mind, I had accomplished a lot.
I'm on this journey about all things leadership, and I've been doing a lot of reading and I listen to podcasts, and I'm very excited by that. And something I read recently, it's John Maxwell, 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. And, you know, he talks about, like, good leaders create followers, great leaders create leaders. And it sounds like you were doing that at the Port. You created some leaders. I think that's exciting. Was there, like, you know, are there any leadership principles or a single leadership principle you thought you really wanted to bestow on your team or that you felt you lived out and really helped you be successful?
I think my biggest success, or what I should say is what I did, was just knowing the staff. One of the things I joked with our HR department was I think I had 170 people in permanent staff working for me. And I knew everyone's name. I knew every single one of them. Being a good leader doesn't necessarily mean barking out orders. It means listening to the people that are actually doing the work, being out there in the field, and being available. I tell you, with what went on with COVID and the work from home and some people thinking that it's better to work from home than being in the office, I made sure that I was in the office at least 4 days a week. I was going out in the field to see my staff. And in those tough times during COVID, when a lot of people were at home working from home and my staff was always out in the field every day, I don't think they ever had a problem doing it because they knew I was out there with them. And what I used to say is when I used to sit in my office on days when somebody would say, well, you could do this from home, the difference was no one would call my cell. A young engineer working for me would not pick up the phone and call the chief of construction on his cell phone. But if I was sitting there in my office and they walked by and they waved and they said, hi, Mike. And I said, hey, how are you? And I waved them into my office and said, and I asked them the question, what's going on? They would come in, they would sit down, and the next thing you know, a half hour would go by. And we had an intense conversation. That wouldn't happen on the phone. Face-to-face is the way to go. If you're going to develop future leaders, you got to be there with them. It's not enough to impart your knowledge on them. They've got to know that you've got their back. And the only way to have their back is to be out there with them.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp., your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
I love it. Not to summarize, but a couple of quick things I focus on and try to do. But being authentic, right? It sounded like you were saying, be real, get to know your team, communicating, right? Giving opportunities to talk and express how you're feeling and what's going on. A lot of good advice. I'm going to get back to some more leadership stuff, but I wanted to circle back to something you said earlier. So, you know, you wake up the next morning, you realize you're not going back to work. You said you took a week off. What did you do during that week?
I just caught up on some odds and ends. Of course, the first day I had to text a couple of my friends at the Port Authority and just say, hey, you know, how's it going? It's Monday morning and I'm actually at ShopRite. What are you doing? You know, it was, like I said, it was different. It was a different feeling. You know, I didn't take a lot of time off. I guess if I had taken a couple of months off, I probably would have drove myself crazy or I would have got a lot of the honey-do list done. But I really just wanted to get back to work, you know, and that's part of it. I like what I do. I like working in construction. I like construction management. I like working with people. And that's you've got to like people and you've got to like your job. What's the saying? If you like what you do, you never work a day in your life. It's the reality. I mean, listen, there are the tough days with the tough employees where, yeah, you work that day. Let's face facts. But I had more good days than I ever had bad.
That's awesome. And so the week goes by and, you know, what excited you most about your first day at Lero and what was that like?
I can't say I wasn't nervous because it was the first time I started a new job in 34 years.
The dark side, right?
People keep saying that to me. People joke with me. My boss says it to me all the time. He says, you're acclimating to the dark side pretty quickly. But let's face facts. We're all doing the same job. We're just working for somebody else.
It's very collaborative.
You know, exactly. Collaboration, that's a great word, and that's the key. It really is a collaboration. Going to put what I mentioned earlier, you know, it's no matter who you're working with, whether you're working with consultants, working with contractors, the vast majority of people just want to do a good job. Going back to my staff numbers, I had 160, almost 170 permanent PA people. In addition to that, I had over 400 consultants.
Wow.
And I think the biggest key to managing that many consultants is not treating them any different than your regular staff. That was something I always did. I never treated anybody differently. In fact, there were some key consultants that I always picked up the phone and called if I had a question, and I still do. I'm still in touch with most people I've worked with, consultant and or PA. You know, that's going back to collaboration. I learned that now on the outside is as big as a community of engineering is, it's a small community because you never know who you're going to be working with again. And I've been collaborating with a lot of different people. Some people I know, some people from the consulting side that I worked with previously when I was in the Port Authority. It's a very good idea not to burn bridges because you never know when you're going to be working with somebody again. And I never felt the need to burn a bridge.
Yeah, it's our industry. I was actually having this conversation just the other day. It's just collaborative by nature, right? I mean, very often, is it a solo firm completing an entire project, right? Between engineering and architecture and contractor and CM and sometimes a developer and the financing partner, you know, it could go 100 different ways. So it's very often joint ventures are taking place. It's just a collaborative environment. And that's one of the things I love about it, right? We're able to generate a lot of win-win situations, right? Even primarily in what we do, like as sub-consultants, but we can offer really good value to a prime consultant who has all of their strengths, but maybe needs something from us, right? It's very collaborative in that way.
Definitely. I mean, I see it now being on the dark side, as you called it. There's a lot more teaming. The projects are not getting smaller. The projects are getting bigger. My former chief engineer used to say when he started in the business, everything was in the millions. Now it's in the billions. And that's very true. I mean, all our projects are huge projects. They're in the billions of dollars. And you can, no one firm can handle it by themselves. There's always teaming. You're always looking for people with specialties. And we all know how hard it is to find staff nowadays. People always look for bodies.
Yeah, it's very tough right now, which is fortunate, right? The industry is strong. We're busy, but we need talent. That leads me kind of into the next conversation. I always like to focus some part of the show on, you know, advice for the next generation and kind of what types of programs are doing. First question I'll ask you on that is, what do you think is the greatest challenge for young engineers entering the industry?
If they want to learn, there's tons of projects, tons of jobs to get out there. I think part of the problem is if their focus is too narrow. Listen, looking at my history, I went to school for design, right? I mean, all the courses I took at Cooper Union were all really geared towards design. I didn't take any construction management classes. And somehow along the way, I ended up being a construction manager for 34 years. Pivot. Take a look at something. I mean, I've had people work for me that went to engineering for 4 years and then said, I don't want to be an engineer anymore. But they found other positions. You look at the Port Authority. Some of the highest level of staff at the Port Authority started out as engineers and then took on a new role. The chief operating officer of the Port Authority started out as a mechanical designer. The director of TB&T, Diane Eller, will tell you she's a reformed geotech engineer. She jokes about that all the time. Engineering is a great place to start, but it doesn't mean that you have to end up there. So I think for people coming out of college, you know, the engineering classes gives you the ability to have to calculate, to think about things that you can move into any other industry after that. Looking back at some of the people I went to college with, one's, I think, a computer programmer. Another one went into the actuary field. It is a stepping stone for a lot of different careers. You have to be happy. So come out, try something. If you don't like that, try something else. We had designers that would move into construction. We had construction people that would go to design. That's just the nature of the business. You're not always right the first time out. I got lucky. I was right the first time out. I went into construction and I stayed there.
I love a pivot. It's like such a simple thing, but yeah. And two concepts I really liked in that answer. One was pivot, right? Find what excites you. And then two was be happy, right? So try to find a career or a path that makes you happy. And I think sometimes people lose sight of that, right? Like your internal joy is important as part of what you do. Tell us a little bit in terms of, so young people entering the industry are now looking for leadership roles. What are some of the things, like either at the Port or Liro, that you guys implemented that you thought were like positive programs or initiatives for younger engineers or younger construction managers to participate in?
So at the Port Authority, we had the associates program where you would hire somebody out of college. For the first year, they would rotate through all of engineering and learn the different fields of engineering, the different businesses, business arms of engineering. Then from there, they would go out to the field. And what I will say is a lot of the younger staff, they would always come back afterwards and say, wow, day two, somebody handed me the keys to the car and said, go out into the field. I wasn't shadowing anybody anymore. And they said, I said, no, we throw you in the deep end pretty fast. And 99% of you learn how to swim. And it's very true. The best advice I could give to some of the younger people is never shun away from responsibility. If people are willing to give you responsibility, take it. Some of the younger staff asked me this I told them this a long time ago, and they said, what's the best advice I could give anybody starting out in the engineering field or any career is when your boss comes to you and says, I want you to do this, don't say no. You know, I think that's where I saw my career in the Port Authority went is I was at JFK. My boss said, I need you to go to Brooklyn Piers. Okay. I went to Brooklyn Piers. 2 years later, he said, I need you in Port Newark. Went to Port Newark. About 3 years after that, they said, we need you down in Hoboken. Okay. I went to Hoboken. Then from there, I just continued to jump. I went to Howland Hook, Port Ivory in Staten Island. From there, I went to Newark Airport. And from Newark Airport, that's where I really think my career took off. I went to Newark Airport as an RE, and before I became the deputy chief of construction, I had moved up all the way to senior engineer of construction in charge of all the construction of both Newark Airport and Teterboro and Stewart Airport too. The reality is, had I do all that, I just never said no.
That's great advice. It's a question I normally ask, but now I don't have to because you beat me to it. But never say no. I like that mantra. I'm going to pivot away from those concepts because since you're on the show, I wanted to ask you about something I think you have unique insights into, which is how do you see the relationship between the public and private sector evolving in major programs? And specifically, I wanted to ask you just, you know, if you could broad strokes, just how the P3 programs have been working, what are your feelings about them? You know, I know the port's undertaken several of them and from all accounts, they've been successful. So just if you wanted to share some thoughts on that.
I know during my time at the Port Authority, we did two P3 programs. One was LaGuardia redevelopment. The other was the Gothels Bridge replacement. And the reality is the reason the Port Authority did those is they didn't have enough money in their capital plan to do those projects on their own. So there's always a give and take. If you're going to get a private partner to build that for you, they're going to put up the revenue, the money up front. All of the income that comes in from those sources afterwards goes to them, or a certain portion of it goes to them. So I know at the Port Authority, it's always analyzed very carefully because it's, yes, you want to get that project done. You need to get that bridge rebuilt. But are you willing to give up all the toll money or a good portion of the toll money that you're collecting? It's a mix of pluses and minuses of the project. I believe right now, the Port Authority is looking at something similar in the fact that a lot of the ports, a lot of the piers at Port Newark, Port Elizabeth need to be rebuilt. They're at their life expectancy. And the Port Authority doesn't have the capital capacity to build all those. So I believe they're asking the tenants when they renegotiate the leases to let the tenants do that work, which for two reasons. One, the tenants have more capital maybe than the PA does for that specific item of work. You know, the PA has a vast amount of work. And the second is the benefit of that is now the tenants control when that work gets done. It's always a give or take. I mean, I worked for the ports in many years and they would promise you a berth and they would say you have this berth for 3 weeks. And sometimes you'd have it for 3 hours and a ship would show up. And you go, how'd you forget that ship was coming in? So that's really where I think the give and take is on public-private partnership. Are you going to see it? I mean, you still see it on certain projects, but I think any public agency has to weigh the pros and cons. What benefits are they getting versus their loss in future revenue? And that's where you need the financial people that are much smarter than I to sit down there and crunch those numbers and figure out where the give and takes are.
Figure it out, yeah. I found it interesting. Everything evolves over time, and it does feel like there's, you know, at least more acceptance around P3 programs now, and obviously a couple underway. And so,
well, they're necessary, Eric. There's no way that any agency can do all the work themselves. Nobody wants to pay a $50 toll to go across a bridge, right? So, I mean, eventually the infrastructure, we all know there's tons of projects that need, and the infrastructure is in dire need of replacement on many projects. And they're not going to be able to do it all. And the public doesn't want to fund it all with, as I said, and it's an exaggeration, not anything. That's not a fact. So anybody listening, please, I don't want phone calls or anybody calling up the Port Authority and said, I heard I was getting a $50 toll. That's just that is the reality of things is if for the amount of money they would need to, any agency would need to fix something, how much they're collecting from the public would need to double, triple, or quadruple what they're collecting now.
Probably the greatest challenge for the industry now is the balance between how much infrastructure has to be replaced or newly built and where the funds are going to come from. We don't know right now. I really appreciate your time. And before I let you go, I'm going to do our lightning round. We're going to get to know you a little bit better. And so it's four quick questions. First thing that comes to mind, favorite sports team?
New York Mets.
Okay. Hey, a big series coming up. Very cool.
Exactly.
What's your favorite city in the whole world?
I have to tell you, I was just in Italy over the summer. And as of right now, Florence, Italy.
It's beautiful there.
Time there with my wife and friends.
And the food is great.
Food was excellent. I ate way too much gelato while I was there, yes.
Do you have a favorite quote or a mantra you like to live by?
Don't say no.
Yeah.
Take on those challenges.
I love that. With that, I will conclude. Unless there's anything else you want to say, I just want to thank you again for being on. I hope you had a good time. I had a great time. Awesome conversation.
No, I thought this was great, Eric. I appreciate you inviting me. This has been great. And I'll see you at the next event.
Yeah, I'll see you soon. Thanks, Mike.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Building Better Futures. The show notes include links to any resources mentioned in today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.